This morning we'll have a little bit different scenario. We'll be having a split sermon. The first speaker is Mr. Corey Plagenza.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. And good morning to all of you. My wife has been corresponding with the Uries and Holly, actually, and back and forth about this big storm they're having out there and a lot of concerns. Holly did convey, though, that she's not too concerned about that. She's more concerned about the shoes that she had ordered for the feast, that they would get there in time. So I didn't get permission from my wife to tell that story either. So Holly, whatever you tell my wife through texts and phone calls, it's fair game. So just be aware. This morning, what I want to talk about is wisdom. And the simple title, I guess, for the split sermon time is wisdom. Let's take a look at Proverbs 4 by introduction of this topic. And I spend quite a bit of time in Proverbs because we find in Proverbs the wisest man to ever live, King Solomon, we find his words, and certainly a wise individual. Proverbs 4 and verse 10. Proverbs 4 and verse 10. Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. In verse 11, I have taught you in the ways of wisdom. I have led you in the right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered, and when you run, you shall not stumble. That is what wisdom gives us. Wisdom gives us this protection, this ability to walk without stumbling, and puts us in the right path, or our steps will not be hindered. So what is wisdom? Because wisdom, you try to explain it or bring a definition on it, it can sometimes be a little bit hard to put your finger on. Well, wisdom is not education. It's not experience. It's not knowledge. It has these aspects in it, but it is not these things, right? We know a lot of people, and I know quite a few people who have some pretty substantial degrees, and you watch any amount of news or watch C-SPAN, you see people with quite a bit of education, but they do not have wisdom. People that go through things time and time and time again, and there's no wisdom. They didn't gain from the experience that they had and change with the experience that they learned. They didn't change their actions, and they continued to put forth the same thing, and it is not wisdom. And the same thing with knowledge. So what is wisdom? Back to the question, what is wisdom? And wisdom is the ability to apply education, experience, and knowledge to a question or a problem. This is important. And make the right decision. The ability to apply education, experience, knowledge, and we can throw a few more in there, but those three I think will suffice. The ability to apply education, experience, and knowledge to a question or problem and make the right decision. You know, as I said before, if we don't have this ability to do this, we run into all kinds of problems, right? You get education, you can acquire a great deal of education. It doesn't produce wisdom. You can have a ton of experience, live a long time on the earth, and not have wisdom. And you can have all types of knowledge and not have wisdom. It is the ability to apply these things and use them and make a right decision, come to a right decision. That is what wisdom is. And I'll tell a little story about myself. I think I told one about Andrew a while back about him touching the hot wire fence. Well, this one is about when I was his age and I reached out and touched a hot wire fence. And I remember how painful it was. And the experience was not wasted on me, I promise you. I had on a pair of gloves, some leather gloves, and we were out splitting wood, and we were close to this hot wire fence, electrified fence. It was used to keep the cows in, so the cows won't get anywhere near it once they touch it the first time. Even they have a measure of wisdom, I suppose. And it had gotten just the best of me as I see this hot wire fence, and I thought, well, I can touch that because I have these gloves on. Right? And gloves will insulate you from hot wire, from electricity. As I've learned later on, it's important to have the right type of gloves. It's not leather gloves that have been soaked by the rain and have a tremendous amount of dirt on it. So at the young, tender age of about 9, 10, 11 years old, I reached out and I touched, really quickly, touched to see if it would do anything. And like most people, and I know that a lot of people here have had experiences with hot wire fences, that first initial touch, you don't get anything. You kind of get in between the pulses. So the next thing that you do when you're testing a hot wire fence, you realize that it's not hot, that it's not on, you can reach out and just grab it and hold on to it. Well, when that pulse comes through, you'll never forget it. When I was relaying this story, I could feel the pain in my elbow and in my shoulder. That hot wire fence has got quite a powerful punch. But the experience and the education that I got that day and the knowledge that I gained from that, and this is very simple, right? This is a very simple way of explaining where wisdom comes from. But those experiences, that education that I got that day, it brought about quite a bit of wisdom as far as hot wire fences. It's much easier just to walk the 20 feet, look at the end, and see the light on when the wire is on or off. The light will be flashing that it's on, and it's a lot less painful, right? So I have wisdom in hot wire fences. So it's kind of a simple thing, but it relays the example of what wisdom is, what it is. So I don't reach out, you know, I come to the right decision and don't reach out and hold on to that wire anymore, right? Very simple story. Let's take a look at John 5, because wisdom is very important to have, very important thing, but, you know, we are not born with it. We don't inherit it. We usually run into most of it with experience, but we can pick some up through education and apply it and make those right decisions. But we see here in John, the fifth chapter, John 5 and verse 30. John 5 and verse 30. This is talking about Christ. And it says, I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge. And my judgment is righteous because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me, right? Jesus Christ is saying, look, I don't have the wisdom within myself. It doesn't come from within me, and more so of us. You know, it's not something that we have inherently within us, right? He gets it because he says, my judgment is righteous because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. So where does that wisdom come from? He's saying it's coming from God. It's coming from God. God gives that wisdom and gives that understanding. He had to receive wisdom and guidance from God in order to have that righteousness and display that righteousness, as we do too. Every day, we need to ask God of this. We need to realize that that's where that knowledge comes from and that wisdom comes from, that it comes from God. And we have to be looking for that every single day. But there are two different types of wisdom. Two different types of wisdom. There is that fleshly wisdom, which is like the kind that we find in this world, the kind that you find in politics. It's very, very short-sighted. It doesn't have the long-term game, if you will. It doesn't have the long-term game in sight. It's all about self. It has no concern of the other person. And then the second type is that godly knowledge. And it's the kind that we find in living God's way of life and reading the Bible and understanding what God has in store for us and what we are supposed to be learning and doing in our lives. It's much more long-term. It's not concerned about the self. It is concerned about others. And it has that very important aspect of give rather than get, which we find in that fleshly wisdom. Let's go over to Proverbs, back to Proverbs again. Proverbs, the first chapter. Okay, Proverbs 1 and verse 1, it says, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. It's coming from the wisest man to walk the earth. It says, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equality, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the word of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of this, is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and despise instruction. The type of wisdom he's talking about here is this godly wisdom. And Solomon had that in abundance. You know, he explains what it is here, what that godly wisdom is in these seven verses here in 1 Proverbs. Let's take a look at what Paul has to say about it. Paul in 1 Corinthians 1. 1 Corinthians, the first chapter. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 26. It says, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called." We are not to be this kind of wise. We're not supposed to be wise according to the flesh. We're not supposed to be that short-sighted wisdom, that wisdom that is self-seeking, that wisdom that is only concerned about the self. That's not the wisdom we're supposed to have. So when it says, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called," it's saying, look, we're not supposed to be like that, right? We're supposed to have this other godly wisdom, this other type of wisdom. So for those that have been around a long time, I know that I have fallen into this trap. We'll go back to Proverbs 3. You think that you may have acquired quite a bit of wisdom, quite a bit of knowledge and wisdom, and you apply that rightly, but that can be a very serious trap. Proverbs 3 and verse 7 warns us, Solomon warns us against this kind of wisdom and what type of wisdom that is. Proverbs 3 and verse 7, it says, "Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil." Proverbs 3 and verse 7. That is telling us, you know, don't think that you're wise. Don't be wise in your own eyes, right? You're supposed to fear the Lord and depart from evil. I'm not supposed to be thinking that we have all of the answers. And if you begin to think that you have all the answers, you're on very dangerous ground. We're supposed to run from that, fear evil, because it is evil to think that you have that wisdom, that godly wisdom. We should always be growing in that wisdom. Proverbs 26 and verse 12. Proverbs 26 and verse 12. "Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope." You know, this is what God is telling us. If you think that you are wise in your own eyes, listen to what God has to say here. He says, "Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than him." And we have ran into people that do very foolish things and act very foolishly. And someone who sees themselves as wise in their own eyes is in worse shape than that individual. You know, so that is a very dangerous ground to be on. And it's important to remember that we don't know everything about everything. Today, people face some of the greatest problems in history, some of the greatest challenges, and they apply fleshly wisdom to it, and they end up falling into all sorts of new problems, right? So this thinking about this, I was thinking about this fleshly wisdom says, and you can listen to economists talk about this and debate this for quite some time, but we know that God has told us that the borrower is slave to the lender. But our nation and the nations across the earth all say the same thing. It's good to run a little bit of deficit. It's good to have debt. And so we start out with millions of dollars of debt, and it turns into billions, and it turns into trillions. And the fleshly wisdom says, oh, no, it's good. And if a little bit is good, well, then a lot is great. And so we are in a position where we are trillions of dollars into debt, and you wonder, how do you get around that godly wisdom that says the borrower is slave to the lender? I'm not going to turn to that scripture, but it stops and makes you think about what that fleshly wisdom, how opposed it is to that godly wisdom. And godly wisdom is looked at as ignorance in this world's sight, in that fleshly wisdom's sight. Our role in the world tomorrow will be to apply godly wisdom. So it is important to have this godly wisdom, because we will be there in the kingdom of God, in that world tomorrow, and we will be teaching others how to apply this godly wisdom. We will be putting aside this humanly wisdom and saying, hey, listen, that is ignorance. That is a way of folly. The true wisdom that you must follow is godly wisdom. We will teach people how to overcome their problems. So gaining, learning about wisdom and gaining wisdom is of the utmost importance for us. We need to be learning that, applying it in our own lives, gaining it with these experiences and the education and the knowledge, and applying that to godly wisdom. I think I might be jumping ahead of my notes, but you know, I have a gentleman at work yesterday. We went out to eat, we were out at lunch, and he asked me, I had asked for no bacon on my sandwich, and he said, "Why do you not eat pork? Why do you always ask to have the pork taken off?" He sees it as the best part of the sandwich, right? And normally, with my fleshly wisdom, I don't want to get into religion and have a big long discussion or him to tell me that I'm stupid because I don't eat pork, that was done away with or whatever. And there is a time for that. You know, I'm not saying that this is the right approach every time. And so my normal reaction is to first thing say, you know, pork is poor man's food. It was something that I heard growing up quite a bit. And so you say, pork is poor man's food. I don't eat no poor man's food. Well, this individual, you could see right away, if you eat pork and I'm telling you that pork is a poor man's food, you could see right away how this individual would get defensive. And so I stopped myself because that is my immediate response, is to say that one-liner. But you know what? I thought, you know what? What is the reason I don't eat pork? I got to stop and think about this for a second. And the reason I don't eat pork is because I followed the dietary laws set out by God in the Old Testament delivered to Israel. And so I simply said that. And he didn't really know where to go with it, but he said, you know what? I really don't like pork that much, you know? It's really not that good. And I thought, here is an example of using godly wisdom rather than my own fleshly wisdom. What a great example that is. Rather than putting out what I think is wisdom and answering that question, I just simply stated what God had given, the reason God had given for us not to eat pork. And we didn't get much further into it, but we can talk about all the reasons that pork is not good for you that we've found out since God has told Israel, you know, you're not supposed to be eating it. But I didn't have to. He was totally on board with why I didn't eat pork. I think next time he'll probably be right there in line with me and try to get the extra pork on his, but what he does with it, that's his business. I want to go through a few scriptures here, four scriptures here. The problem with fleshly wisdom, the problem that we have with fleshly wisdom. We've already talked a little bit about that. It's selfish. It's the get way of life. But I want to take a look at some scriptures here. 1 Corinthians 2. And we'll look at verse 13 here. It says, "These things we also ask, not in words which man's wisdom teaches, but which the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual things." Right? We're not applying man's wisdom. We're not putting that into motion here. And if we go up and read verse 6, it says, "However, we speak wisdom among those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age," not that fleshly wisdom, "not the wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age, who are coming to nothing." So the problem with fleshly wisdom, it's coming to nothing. God will put it down. It comes to nothing in our lives, and it will come to nothing in the end when God brings about Jesus Christ's rule on this earth and the establishment of his kingdom and an end to this foolish earthly fleshly wisdom. Let's take a look at 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 1. And verse 12. 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 12. It says, "For our boasting is this, the testimony of our conscience, that we conduct ourselves in the world in simplicity and godly sincerity, not with fleshly wisdom, but by the grace of God and more abundantly towards you." That is the difference there between godly wisdom and fleshly wisdom. It has a sincerity about it. It has a sincerity that is an outward care and concern. James 3 and verse 15. James 3 and verse 15. And under these, I just have them again. The problem with fleshly wisdom. James 3. And verse 15, "This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic." So when we think that we are coming up with our own, this fleshly wisdom, and it's being applied, we have to remember where it comes from. Just like godly wisdom, where does godly wisdom come from? Well, it comes from God, obviously. Well, fleshly wisdom, it has to have an origin as well. and it tells us that that origin is earthly, sensual, and demonic. It is from the ruler of this world. It is a serious, it is the leading reason why there is a problem with fleshly wisdom. Let's take a look, last one here that I have under this heading, before we look at an example. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. It says, whose mind the God of this age has blinded, right? So we know where that fleshly wisdom comes from. And this fleshly wisdom that it is talking about the author here, verse 4 of 2 Corinthians 4. It says, whose mind the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine in them. Satan has put this fleshly wisdom to blind mankind to God's way of life. And if we are practicing that fleshly wisdom, we are blinded as well. Having godly wisdom opens our eyes to the veil that has been put over all of mankind, and it gives us that opportunity to see clearly the blessing, the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is in the image of God, that it would shine in us. And that is why it is so important to stay away from that earthly, fleshly wisdom and to cling to, learn, and experience and apply to make right decisions in our lives with godly wisdom. Let's take a look at an example of this. And I had read this a few times and had to go back and reread it. I think I have the gist of it because I kind of get tied up. Luke 16, in reading it and was reading the words rather than reading what exactly it was saying here. Luke 16 and verse 1. This is the parable of the unjust steward. And this is an example of fleshly wisdom, how fleshly wisdom is applied, right? In chapter 16 of Luke, and we'll start in verse 1. It says, he also said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that his man was wasting his goods, right? So this guy gets word and they say, hey, your steward is wasting your goods. And he says in verse 2, so he called him and he said to him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward, right? So he's taking the responsibility and the role away from him. But then in verse 3, the steward says within himself, what shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me, and I cannot dig, right? I can't work. This is my livelihood, and I am ashamed to beg. And in verse 4, he comes up with a solution, a fleshly wisdom applied to this problem, right? The problem that we are encountered. Rather than using godly wisdom, he uses this fleshly wisdom that he's been given. He says, I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their house, right? These people. So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, how much did you owe my master? Right? So he's devised a plan. He's putting it into motion here. And he says, verse 6, and the gentleman replied, and he says, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Truly, this is the way earthly wisdom works, right? This is the way it works. And then he said to another, how much do you owe to my master, right? Same thing. And he answered, he says, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. Right? Well, the second guy didn't get quite as good a deal as the first guy, but you know, that's beside the point. Right? They probably weren't in the same room at the same time, but if they knew, they probably would have taken the guy out and flogged him, or the second guy would have. But in verse 8, he says, so the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly, for the sons of the world are more shrewd in their generations than the sons of light. So it's almost like he praised him, he's rewarded him. And the master had commended him. And verse 9, it says, and I say to you, make friends for yourself by unrighteous mammon, which is what this individual did. Then when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. And he who is faithful, verse 10, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. So we're still at the point where it sounds pretty good for this guy. Until you read verse 11, it says, therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, as this individual had not been, He was not faithful. He was acting shrewdly, was applying earthly human wisdom to his problem. And in the latter part of verse 11, it says, "Who will commit to your trust the true riches?" That's what we're after. We're after those true riches. Would God commit those in your hand if he saw you acting shrewdly, if he saw you acting like this? We'll go ahead and finish all the way to verse 13 here. It says, "And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one, be loyal to the one, and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." You cannot have godly wisdom and human wisdom and apply them both. It has to be one or the other. This is why God says in 1 Corinthians 1, when we get into that kingdom and those treasures are given to us and we receive those treasures, there won't be a competing wisdom there. There won't be Satan's wisdom, that fleshly wisdom. They're competing with God's wisdom. In 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 19, this is what's happening to this earthly wisdom. It says, "For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent." God is not messing around with human wisdom. There is no place for it. It is, as we found in James, it is demonic. It is lacking greatly in that it doesn't produce godly wisdom. It doesn't produce that outward concern for others. It is a selfish wisdom. Let's go back to James 3, and let's look at James 3 and verse 17. James 3 and verse 17. So we read in James 3 and verse 15, it says, "This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic." But it says in verse 17, dropping down just a verse there, it says, "But the wisdom that is from above, these are the attributes of it. It is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruits of righteousness is sown in peace to those who make peace." This godly wisdom that we are supposed to be acquiring, that we're supposed to be applying in our lives, this is what it is. And if we don't have these things in our lives, and we're making decisions and it's not producing these types of fruit, you know, being pure and peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. That is what happens when you apply godly wisdom to the decisions that you run into in your life. God's wisdom is based on his spiritual laws. As I said before, it is a give and serve wisdom, not human wisdom as the take and get approach. So how do we acquire godly wisdom? How do we acquire it? How do we go about getting godly wisdom? Let's turn over to Psalms 111. Right? We see the importance of it. We can see how truly important it is, the role that it plays in our lives today, how important it is to apply that wisdom in the relationships that we have in this life. And it also, having that godly wisdom, we see the role that it'll play in God's kingdom. But how do we acquire it? How do we acquire it? Psalms 111. Psalms 111 and verse 10. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and a good understanding have all of those who do his commandments." Well, if you don't know anything else, if you don't hear anything else and understand anything else, there are two things that we can spend the rest of our lives doing to bring about that wisdom. The first one is to fear the Lord. And not fear God that he'll smite you, as the Catholic Church preaches, or you know, some of the hellfire and brimstone messages. No, that fear is of what? It's of the Lord. But the second part tells us, "A good understanding have all of those who do the commandments." That's the second part. That's what we're supposed to be doing. But that's where the fear part comes in. We are to fear to disobey God, right? You want to fear disobeying God. And if you are keeping his commandments, you have nothing to fear, right? It's not this fear that has been preached on many a Sundays where there's going to be, you know, the hell to pay kind of message. No, it's a message that tells us that we are to obey God and fear disobeying Him. Let's go back to Proverbs again. Said I was going to spend quite a bit of time in Proverbs. We'll go back there again. I have a couple here. Proverbs 14 and verse 16. It says, "A wise man fears and departs from evil, but a fool rages and is self-confident." Right? He doesn't worry about what God has said. He doesn't have this external fear of God and disobeying God. He is self-confident in himself. He's not concerned with displeasing God. And a wise man fears God and he departs from evil. He departs from evil. That is what we're supposed to be doing. If we see something that is going wrong in our lives, we're supposed to turn, go the other way, depart from that evil, and be fearful that we would fall under God's punishment for breaking his laws. And then just back a page in Proverbs 10 and verse 8. "The wise in heart will receive commands." Again, what commands? He'll receive God's commands. His heart will receive those commands. "But a prating fool will fall." And he'll fall because he doesn't receive them. He doesn't receive those commands. A wise man, you know, a wise individual will keep God's commandments. That is something that we have to do. We have to fear God and keep his commandments. And this is what God says about those who fear him and keep his commandments. Matthew 7 and verse 24, it says, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who builds his house on the rock." You know, how great would that be to be considered a wise man who builds their house upon the rock? That God would look at you or myself or any of us in that respect. It would be a pretty awesome thing. And what does it say? That individual, as God looks on him, what does he have to do? He follows God. You know, he follows God and he keeps his commandments. And this is how he will see us. Romans 16. This is what God wants for us and from us. Romans 16 and verse 19. "For your obedience has become known to all. Therefore I am glad on your behalf. But I want you to be wise in what is good and simple concerning evil." Right? He wants for us and he wants this from us. He wants us to be wise in what is good. He wants us to be wise in what his way of life gives. He wants us to understand that, to apply it, and to make the right decisions. And he wants us to be simple concerning evil. You know, it is a hard thing to hear some of the evil that goes on in this world. And you can see what a blessing it is and what is being talked about here in verse 19. It's saying, yeah, there is a blessing to being simple concerning evil, right? You don't have to fill your ears full of the nonsense that goes on in this world to appreciate how wonderful that is. You can read this scripture here and you understand, yeah, there are some things that I wish I didn't know about what goes on in this world. Some pretty terrible things. And verse 19 simply says that very thing, being simple concerning evil. We wouldn't be wise to it. We wouldn't practice it. We wouldn't fill our ears with it and delve into it to understand the evil that goes on. So we can see that godly wisdom is a gift. It truly is a gift to us. 1 Corinthians 12. And we'll start in verse 7. 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 7, it says, "But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to each one for the profit of all. For to one is given the word of wisdom through the Spirit, to another the word of knowledge through the same Spirit." This is the beginning, right? This is the beginning of the fruits of that Spirit, right? The spiritual gifts that are given. And the first one there that it mentions is wisdom through the Spirit. It is a gift that we can have. It is a gift to us, as I had said earlier, and it is spelled out here in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 8, as a gift that God gives, the wisdom given through the Spirit. So how do we receive it, right? How do we receive it? Well, just like everything else, it's plainly spelled out for us. James 1 and verse 5, it says, "If you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to you." When was the last time that you asked for wisdom? When was the last time that you asked for that? It's pretty plain, pretty clear how we receive that wisdom, how we get it, right? We just ask God. You know, we need it. We do not know everything about everything. We absolutely need God's wisdom, and we just simply ask. And I don't think I'm alone, but in every relationship that I have, and the relationship that I have with God, and the relationships that I have within my family, the relationships that I have with friends, and the relationships that I have with neighbors, the relationship that I have with my boss, I need godly wisdom. Godly wisdom is so vitally important to make those relationships work. And we find ourselves in a world that is filled with terrible relationships, because godly wisdom is not applied in those relationships. Instead, human wisdom. And no wonder we have so many problems. No wonder we have so many problems with all of these relationships. We're applying the wrong kind of wisdom. When we find ourselves facing a tough decision, don't be hasty. You know, consider the results of the actions that you're going to jump into. You know, we can talk about, counselors, right? Go and seek wise counsel. And that's important. I'm not saying not to. And we just have to be aware of where we're getting that. Would you go to somebody who's a scorner? Or would you go to somebody who doesn't believe in God? Would you go to somebody that you know is a fool in most aspects of their lives? Well, probably not. And counsel, let's just be honest about it. If counsel was a good thing all the time, the legislative bodies of this world would have figured out all of the solutions, all of the problems that they have. But they haven't. They haven't. They're not applying godly wisdom. So if we're going to seek out wisdom, seek out godly wisdom. Seek out those that have that godly wisdom, that have those fruits that we read about earlier that come from having godly wisdom. And don't fall into that trap that I talked about earlier of knowing it all. There's an important thing that we see from the example in 1 Kings 3. 1 Kings 3. 1 Kings 3 and verse 7. This is talking about Solomon, you know, and he had quite a bit of wisdom. And you think about what he had asked of God here. And I know I've been in situations where I wish I had this kind of wisdom to ask for this kind of wisdom or ask for these kind of things so that my life could be blessed. Instead, kind of get wrapped up in the physical things of this life and forget about what we are doing here, you know, as Satan makes abundantly clear to us on a daily basis that we should walk according to his way. And it can sometimes be difficult, but Solomon here has a great approach, a very humble approach. In verse 7 of 1 Kings 3 and verse 7, it says, "Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted." And verse 9, "Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this great people of yours?" Solomon had a very humble approach and was asking, as we read in James there, James 1:5, he was asking for wisdom. He was asking for understanding. He was asking how to rule, how to fulfill the responsibility that God had given him, how to deal with this problem. It was a great blessing, but it was a problem. And Solomon understood through his humility that he needed godly wisdom, and that is what he asked for. And a truly wonderful, amazing request from such a young man, truly a wise individual. Let's take a look at Romans, the 12th chapter, Romans 12. Because we see Solomon and the humility that he had in asking, let's take a look here in Romans 12 and verse 3, keeping that in mind. It says, "For I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith, right? That sober humility that we should have, you know, think humility when we are asking. God will give you wisdom if we ask. And just like the example I was talking about earlier about eating pork, that is not what immediately springs to my mind to say, well, I follow the dietary laws laid out in the Old Testament, the same dietary laws that were delivered to the Israelites, right? That is a mouthful that will quickly bring scorn from others. But I applied it, and it came out great, better than it did with my own. And so that leads us to Luke, the 21st chapter, Luke 21. Luke 21 and verse 15, we see, "For I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist." God's way of life is like that. He'll give us that answer. He'll give us that wisdom. He'll give us the answer to that problem when the time comes. And it is through godly wisdom that we answer. And He will supply that when the time comes. Just a couple closing scriptures moves me to Daniel, and we'll finish here in Daniel. Daniel 12 and verse 10. Wisdom is not a fleeting thing. It's not something that is going away. It won't change when Jesus Christ returned to this earth. Godly wisdom is now, for our lives now, and it's for mankind forever and for ourselves forever. We read in Daniel 12 and verse 10, it says, "Many shall be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand." Wisdom gives understanding. It gives understanding to us. Daniel 12, and we'll go to verse 3 here. And we realize what that's talking about there in verse 10. It says, "Many shall be purified." I mean, we understand what that's talking about. In verse 3, we move up Daniel 12 and verse 3. It says, "Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever." Those that inherit the kingdom. Then we will help once we have that godly wisdom and once we have proven ourselves and get to this point here that it's talking about in Daniel 3, 12, 3, we will help God save the rest of humanity. And this is what we are being trained for today. So as we seek out godly wisdom and we try to have godly wisdom, apply godly wisdom in our lives, we need to remember it's not just education, experience, and knowledge to the questions or problems. But it is the ability to apply education, experience, knowledge that we find in God's Word, in God's Bible, and in His teachings through the commandments. And it is the ability to apply those things and through the Bible where we find it to the problems that we have. And we have to make those right decisions.